Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4, Brian Hazio, Doug Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got Chris Rose coming up in about 5 minutes. He'll help us look ahead to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. I guess he was out walking his dog. He snapped the pick. He saw Aaron Boone driving around today. And Aaron Boone, I guess if you're a manager in Major League Baseball, you're not really doing anything right now. You're just in a lockout. You're waiting for the suits to figure it out. And you guys see the news today that AAA ball this year are going to have robotic umpires. They're going to have the robotic strike zone starting this year in AAA.
So what is there? No human umpires on the field?
Well, the umpires that, you know, yeah, first, second, third, like you still have to have umps on a judgment call, effectively.
And at home plate.
And at home plate for if there's a play at the plate, yes. But I guess the strike zone will be determined by a robotic ump or a robotic strike zone.
Do you want that? I don't think you don't like
Isn't
that.
Isn't the umpires union, like, out of their mind pissed right now? Like, don't they have...
Unless they feel like they can keep getting paid the same amount of money and not have any responsibility for a strike zone.
I guess.
You know, the lazy man's way out could be, hey, I'll keep paying me. I'll stand back there and let the robot tell me what to do. Strike.
Well, you know where that's going. There's only one way they're doing it in the minors is because they want to see how it goes. Because if it goes well, it's going right to the big leagues.
Absolutely. Right. I think there's too much of, a tidal wave moving in that direction. I think the pendulum swung quite some time ago. The game is so statistically driven and robotic in many ways, just in terms of the way baseball is played.
And 25 years ago, nobody sat on their couch, Hayes, and made videos and put them on TikTok saying, look at how bad this strike call is.
Exactly. Instant replay, 4K TV. Yeah. Are we still at 4K? Is there 5K? Is that what's coming next? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. We got the 5K. Angle.
Is there 5K now?
Yeah, there is 5K angle on TSN. They spin it around, and
that's not 5K impressive. Though. That's 5G, isn't it? Like,
sorry.
Isn't that?
You're
I'm
right.
Talking,
you're right. Sorry,
you're 5G.
Right.
Yep.
5G.
You're right. 5G look. Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, though. I like.
Very
that.
Cool. Very cool. I'm a supporter of the 5G. I'm saying, what is the next level of TV and, you know, screen? Like, how much more personal
I don't
can
want
it get? I don't know.
I don't want it too much where the people can, like, look at the pores on your face. It's not good.
I know. That's the thing.
It's not a good look, you know, if you're...
No one wants that. You can't get too close. You don't want to see every possible blemish. But, I would think that means that's where it's trending for baseball. I think it's going to get there. It's just a matter of when, I guess.
Yeah.
That said, you know, the whole Tampa-Montreal split team, that was going to be an evolution of the sports world, and that got shot down yesterday.
Dude, that was the dumbest thing that's ever been proposed, as if the guys, like, you're talking about guys with kids in schools and what, they're going to go, like, no way.
No, I never understood it from a player's perspective. I didn't really understand the logistics of it all either.
It was never possible.
No, you're because it'd be one thing if Tampa and Miami split a team, you know, maybe even that seems goofy and unnecessary. When you're talking about the amount of revenue and franchise value in pro sports today, it's not like it's going the opposite way. They're still making money hand over fist. It's getting better and better year in, year out. But, you know, geographically, for whatever reason, if you had Tampa and Orlando split a team, you know, let's say that. Like, Miami's already got their own team. Let's say Tampa said, we're looking at Orlando. We feel like that could be something we could take advantage of. Tampa to Montreal is a three-hour flight. You know, it's a different country. They speak French in one of the cities. Like,
that's
it doesn't
true.
Make any sense logistically whatsoever. And I feel for people in Montreal because it felt like that was it. You know, like, it does seem like there's a lot of pessimism, the idea that this will somehow come alive again or baseball will expand and Montreal will be at the forefront of it because – Montreal, I just don't know if they have the backing economically in terms of a new stadium, in terms of their own history where the Expos, you know, were run into the ground by ownership in many ways, but also it just wasn't a great scene by the end of it. So I don't know. Feels like that dream could be dead in Montreal.
Would you be on board with their team in Montreal?
Sure. Yeah, I'd prefer it than anywhere else in the States. Like, as a Canadian, of course. I'm greedy from that standpoint.
Vancouver? Did you ever go watch the Expos up there? Like,
I didn't
ever
go too much. I've been to the Big O.
I've been too. The problem is, I went opening night, when I was playing in the playoffs, and it was packed, 55,000 people.
Really?
Next night, 2,400.
Yeah.
So it's like,
big turn.
As soon as I saw that, I'm like, maybe they just can't put people. It's amazing. Like, they put people in the stands, or they don't put people in the stands, and then fans are like, wow, get us a team back. They don't support the team, they lose the team, and it's like, well, we deserve a team. Well, why do you deserve a team if you didn't support it when it was there? And there might have been ownership stuff and stuff that pissed fans off, but, man,
yeah,
you got to enjoy it while it's there, and if you don't go support it, it'll be gone. Gone.
Yeah, by the end it was ugly. It's been a tough week in Quebec, man. Like, Quebec City got told thanks, but no thanks in the NHL. Now, Montreal was hoping to...
How did Quebec City think they was going to get a team, Hayes, in the NHL with what's going on? And Jerry is sitting back saying, I hate Canada so much right now. And you think you want another team there? No thanks.
The timing was tough for that.
Yeah. I'll go to Flint before I go to Quebec City.
I think you're probably right. Here is Chris Rose. You know him from the NFL Network, Chris Rose Rotation Podcast. He's been on before, and he joins us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's happening, Chris?
All good, gang. What's going on?
Well, we kind of got onto a little bit of a baseball tangent. We saw your tweet. You ran into Aaron Boone, I guess, walking your dog. And you know, like, baseball managers aren't doing anything right now. They're just waiting for some sort of resolution in terms of the CBA. And that led us to the conversation about the robotic strike zone in AAA. And I sense that it's coming to the majors at some point. Are you a supporter of that idea?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. You know, I didn't follow it closely enough, and I think it was used in the Atlantic League last year, I want to say, to see what people thought about it. But, you know, I have no problem with the premise whatsoever. You know, I mean, the strike zone for years has just been a moving target, and people always say, well, as long as you're consistent. Well, I mean, I think if we can improve, you know, that might have worked 30 years ago when we don't have the technology that we do today. You know, if you're going to keep saying that 2 + 2 = 5, but as long as you say it every time, you might believe that 5 is the right. It's not the right answer, by the way. It's no math major, but I'm just making sure, right?
Right. We're good. We're following.
Yeah. But you guys kind of get what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think the, romanticizing of the strike zone where people say, well, as long as we're close enough and consistent, no, like, let's try and get it right. Gang, let's do that.
Yeah, my issue with it is the humanity that comes out of it and the allowance of a guy like me who's got a show. Like, I want to rip on Angel Hernandez. I want that content.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, don't worry, you'll get that somewhere. Don't worry.
Probably. He'll screw up somewhere else and I'll find it. But, you know, I do.
That's coming.
That's somewhat nostalgic, I'll admit. You know, like, I miss – you don't see a lot of confrontation or as much confrontation.
Right.
Aaron Boone said one of the great ones of the last, you know, 5 or 10 years when he said he has savages in the box. But I want – that's
totally.
That will be lost. Will it not, Chris, if you get rid of it? Like, Boone's not going to run out and yell at an iPad if the strike zone is what it is.
That's true. So we are going to have to manufacture something because I agree with you. I miss – you know, I loved it when Joe Maddon one time – when he ran out, I think he was in Tampa, and it might have happened in Chicago or something. I don't exactly remember where it happened, but he was mad at all the umpires, and he pointed at each one and ejected him. I mean, it was great. Like, it was good stuff. And, yes, that has been missing quite a bit over the last few years.
With Chris Rose of the NFL Network, check out his podcast, Chris Rose Rotation Podcast. Derrick Henry activated. He's off the IR. He'll be back this weekend. I do think this has been a game that's been largely overshadowed, maybe based on the markets involved, based on an acceptance or a belief that whoever wins this game will run into Kansas City and Buffalo, and that might be the end of the road. But what does the return of Henry for Tennessee do in terms of piquing your interest in that game?
Well, it's definitely not the markets, because Kansas City and Buffalo aren't exactly
right.
New York and L.A.
Yeah, true.
And I don't think everybody's like, man, Green Bay. That place is just huge. So it's all about the sexiness factor, right? I mean, Tennessee, you're like, okay, they've got Derrick Henry and a really good all-pro safety. Like, that's how you look at it. But they're really, really good team, well-coached. That defensive front's going to be a problem for Cincinnati. And I know that we want to focus on the Derrick Henry, and I don't know if he's going to be able to carry it 20 times. I mean, the guy hasn't played it since Halloween. But, I mean, that's, you know, their running game actually did okay without him. It wasn't Henry-esque, but, you know, Deontay Foreman and Dontrell Hilliard did a really, really nice job. And as long as that offensive line is okay, they should be fine. So the question is, are they going to be able to slow down that machine? If Cincinnati continues to settle for field goals like it did last week against the Raiders, then they won't win that game. They're going to have to score some touchdowns when they get close, and they can. I think it'll be a fun game to watch. This is my favorite weekend of the year, guys. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
my boy Joey Burrow. You never know what he might have up his sleeve, man.
He's great. He's great. He's just, you know what, he's like, if you've never seen him play quarterback and you'd say, well, describe him, the word I would use is calm. Like, there's no wasted movement with Joe Burrow. You know, some guys are really good, you know, like far back in the day, you would never use the word calm. He was great to watch. He was a three-time MVP, but it was like somebody stuck his big toe in an electric socket before he took a snap every time. That's not the case with Joe Burrow.
Well, you mentioned Green Bay, and you mentioned Favre, his successor, Aaron Rodgers, back in action this weekend. Actually, you mentioned a toe, and that's been a big part of his conversation this year as well. You got to believe he's back and healthy and good to go. In terms of his future, do you think the next month has any factor on what his decision will be in terms of whether or not he wants to stay in Green Bay or walk?
I don't. I play this out in my head, right? What teams would trade for Aaron Rodgers? Definitely at this point. Pittsburgh would, I think, even though that's not their MO, right? They don't trade for big names. In fact, they don't even bring in a ton of free agent big names. It just, they build through the draft and they go that direction for the most part. Denver would make sense. I don't know how many other teams would for him. You know, I don't know if the Packers are one of those that we have to trade him to an AFC team sort of deal. But if you go and you get traded to Pittsburgh, well, then you've got to deal with Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. And if the Browns ever figure out if Baker's the guy or not, the team certainly has a lot of talent. If you go to Denver, then you got to deal with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert. And if Derek Carr sticks around and that's your fourth best quarterback in the division, good luck.
Right.
Or he could stay where he's been his entire career, where he's beloved, where he's not brought in as a hired gun, where if you don't win the Super Bowl, you're looked at as a complete failure. And who are the other quarterbacks in your division? And two of the teams are looking for coaches. Like, come on, you got a layup there. That division is yours as long as you're around, dude. So if legacy is as important to Aaron Rodgers as we all believe it is, then it makes the most sense to stay in Green Bay, unless there's so much crap behind the scenes that it's just not plausible for him to stay, which I can't believe it is.
How much interest do you have in Tom Brady going back to a Super Bowl, maybe winning another Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, I've got interest in it. I think they're going to have a real tough time this weekend. You know, they could be missing two really good offensive linemen. The Rams are going to be missing their veteran left tackle, Andrew Whitworth. So I think it's a question of, you know, which quarterback is going to be least in the line of fire. Both those defenses can get it done, right? They can both get to the passer, and they can both get to the passer with only four guys. So that's going to be the key stuff this weekend in that game.
If Tampa doesn't get it done, do you think Brady walks away, or is it just the same routine he's going to play again?
Right. So I was thinking about this a little earlier today. Like, at what point does he stop? You know, is it like, is there a real difference between getting a eighth ring or just settling for seven? Like, what is it? There's got to be something in his life that would make him totally change. Like his kids are now old enough to the point where the way that he prepares and pours his energies into being Tom Brady, the quarterback, is going to cost you being able to go watch your kids play sports, or if they're into music or whatever. And I can tell you, this is a father of kids that are 21 and 16 now. Once that stuff is gone, it ain't coming back. Mm-hmm. It just ain't. So at what, there's not, you know, is a loss in the divisional round against the Rams the one where he wakes up on Monday and he goes, yep, it's definitely time. Like, I can't, he's so different than anybody we've ever seen. I would be curious to see what is the one thing that makes him turn. And I can't figure it out. I don't think it's a loss to the Rams.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, he's got everything already. He's already like, it's not like he's fighting with Montana anymore or, you know, anyone else, even within his own generation.
Right.
I don't know what else he's trying to check off other than, hey, can the doubters who believe at 45 he's just simply got to go. You know, that's
– well, but that's not accurate because the guy just threw for 4,300 yards and led the NFL in touchdown – or 5,300 yards and –
I guess I'm saying, like, conventional wisdom would tell you it has to stop, but it's not.
Yes.
You know? It's
but
not.
But, I mean, unless, you know, he gives us that line every year that, you know, I got to take it at the end of the year. There's a lot of energy expended in getting to the point that he does every season, which, you know, nobody can question that. But and then he says, I got to take it year by year. But maybe he's the one who knows that I want to be the guy who plays to 50, and he just doesn't want to tell us in case he doesn't get there. Maybe that's the only thing.
Maybe.
I don't know.
And that, what's amazing about that is you're still looking at another, you know, five seasons before he even gets there. That's a lot of Tom right. Brady material between now and then with Chris Rose. How much of a role do you believe home field advantage, Arrowhead Stadium in particular, is going to play in Kansas City, Buffalo?
Not as much as it normally does because you're taking on a team now that has – played a significant number of playoff road games with a lot of these same guys, including right there a year ago. And they went in the Arrowhead in week five on a Sunday night football game and took it to Kansas City. Now, that was the point where Kansas City was fell to 2-3. We started asking questions about them. They're obviously a much improved defensive squad since then. But Josh Allen is... You know, I think the bigger question is, like, if Buffalo wins this game, is this going to be the one where all of a sudden we all say things have flipped and Buffalo is like the epicenter of the AFC for the foreseeable future? Like, this is going to be the game, I think.
It's going to be the game possibly of the weekend, but as you said earlier, this is such a fun weekend. Anything is possible at this point. It's going to be a blast. Enjoy it all, Chris. We always appreciate you finding time for us. Thank you.
Absolutely, guys. Enjoy the games.
There's Chris Rose of the NFL Network.
What time is that game?
What's the spread on that, too?
That's the Sunday game. The lines have been moving. We've got it on the sheet at -2.5. The Chiefs are -2.5. I've seen different lines with different books, but that's the last game of the weekend. That's
Let's get this sorted out differently. I don't want to be... like, what are we doing? An overdrive line?
It's almost a pick'em, though. I mean, that's pretty damn close.
It's close, yeah. I mean, listen, we'll make sure we're all on the same page before we lock in a bet. But, yeah, it's going Bengals, Titans, Niners, Packers. Those are the two Saturday games. And then Rams at Bucks Sunday afternoon, Bills at Chiefs, the nightcap. And that, I think that's appropriate. The last game of the weekend should be Bills at Chiefs. It's the most highly anticipated game.
Oh, yeah.
Just the nature of the two teams, the two quarterbacks. And I think Chris hits the nail on the head. You know, I used the Winnipeg Jets analogy earlier in the week where you're, you know, in the 80s, it was like, well, Calgary's too good. Edmonton's too good. You got to break through at some point. And the Bills, I don't think this is the end of the road. If they lose to Kansas City, it's not as if next year they're going to win five or six games. But you've been building towards this for a while. You made the playoffs now for a couple of years in a row. Josh Allen is legit. Like, he is a top five quarterback in the league. You're going to have to beat Mahomes. Like, you got to beat Kansas City. They're not going anywhere either. Chances are they'll be right there next year waiting for you. So, you know,
do yourself a favor during that game. If it gets really tense and it's tight coming down the stretch, FaceTime Carlo. Just, I'm telling you, it's worth it.
Have you done that before in a tight
game? Oh, yeah. He FaceTimes me. Bang!
Is he buckled or what?
No. Just normal Carlo. Bang! Yeah.
So he'll FaceTime you to say bang when the Bills are winning?
We have FaceTimed at different parts. It was either Italia or Bills. And this guy gets, Like, I love watching it, but I'm pretty calm on the couch. Like, I usually, you know, keep to my, there's no cheering. Like, I don't cheer or whatever.
Yeah.
But
unless
this guy,
one of your teams, but
this guy goes insane.
Yeah, I've seen the video. I haven't FaceTimed with him in the moment, but I'll take your word for it. I don't think
he was posting videos during the Raptors runs. Him and Michael Landsberg were down at the games, and he would just, I don't know how he knew a big basket was coming, but he would be videotaping himself for whatever reason. And a big basket would go down, and he would be like, yeah, he loves it.
Do you remember when he was one of the video monitor guys in the background?
No.
Do you remember that?
No.
For the Raptors, I'm quite certain.
No, in the bubble, he was one of the bubble fans.
He was one of the guys in the background.
Right. Yes, of course.
Like, but he was like a TV monitor, and
he was in his living room.
He was
in the bubble as a fan.
But he had to sit there. He said he had to sit there for like 3 hours and cheer. Like,
yep. You're right. Was that for a Raptor game, or did he do that for a football game?
No, it was for a Raptor game, because I remember Matty D was like, there's Carlo Colaiacovo.
Bang! You're right. It was a Raptor game. It was when they were in the bubble. You're right. Yes. I totally forgot about that.
This guy was an at-home fan. When they pan the fans at home, you see Coco. Like,
yeah, didn't he have a jersey on or something, like waving, and he... Like, it was almost like they told him when to react, and he would, like, cheer, and it was something else.
What a weird period of time.
Dude.
Like, think about how we're going to
look
back.
Dude, by the way,
he
orchestrated that himself.
Yeah,
like, he dug into how, like, he dug in behind the scenes with contacts to be the fan on the, like, the screen.
I thought he did something for the Bills, too, at some point. Didn't he do something?
He did videos for the Bills with the helmet, and he had Bills bobbleheads, and he was a Bills ambassador. He's everywhere.
Maybe that was like the Canadian ambassador for the Buffalo Bills. Maybe that was exclusively online.
Dude, he's Ricky Bobby. He's what he is. He's Ricky Bobby.
Yeah, he's got a lot on the go.
Advertisements.
Well, he's on the CHL panel. He's on the CHL panel. He and Frankie Corrado and Laura, they're back at it tonight, and it's the Sioux playing Guelph.
Wow.
There you go, your Guelph Storm. That's going to be on TSN 3 tonight. And, the CHL on TSN continues. A battle of Sioux St. Marie and Guelph Storm.
Carlo's calling the game with Vic Lovin?
No, he's on the panel.
He's on the panel, and I think Frankie's there too, right?
Yeah, it's Corrado and Carlo and Laura.
Be awesome, man. That's Dubas versus O-Dog. I love it. Alumni.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, wow. Well, that's a good question. Like, we could have that if you go around the O. Like, when I think of the Sioux, you got to think Gretzky first, right? Like, Gretzky played that one year there. Who else was up there? Joe Thornton was in Sioux St. Marie.
Half the Leafs roster.
Well, exactly. If you played for the Sioux Greyhounds, you'll get a tryout for the Leafs.
Well, Bunting there?
Richie,
Campbell?
Jack Campbell. Was Muzzin never in the Sioux? I don't know if he played in the Sioux.
Like, Jake Muzzin played in the Sioux.
Did he?
Sheldon Keefe.
Sheldon Keefe coached up there. He didn't play in the Sioux, but he was the coach of the Greyhounds.
Yeah. I feel like we're missing somebody else there, too. But I mean,
oh, I'm sure we are. Yeah, I'm sure there were multiple players.
The alumni.
Yeah, the alumni. You're right, Sioux. And
but
when Guelph it comes to Guelph.
Guelph's put out a few players.
Yeah, right. I mean, O'Neill, clearly, Bertuzzi. I think Drew Doughty. Might be. Who's the man for Guelph? Is Drew Doughty going to get his number retired in Guelph?
Drew Doughty, Todd Bertuzzi's number's retired. Tyler Bertuzzi, Ryan Callahan.
Right. Dustin Brown.
Dustin Brown, good
Dustin
Guelph
Brown.
Storm player.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some pretty good players.
Pretty good players. Yep. Every team in the CHL's probably got. You could put
a five pack
together where you're what a team. Like, Oshawa might have the best. Oshawa's got Bobby Orr and Lindros. And Tavares, right?
That's like pretty good.
That's I don't know if you can beat that three.
Dude, it's one of my favorite times, Noodles, is watching my brother play in the OHL during the Lindros time in Oshawa. Those were packed barns, like people lining up to watch Eric Lindros playing junior. And I got to go see my brother because it was Peterborough, Oshawa. And watching that guy play in junior was just the greatest, some of the greatest hockey memories I ever have. How dominant and how big and how good he was.
Yeah, he was a man-child, wasn't he, back then? Like,
it was ridiculous.
To Lindros was skating around through people over top of him, around, like, it was unbelievable.
Getting in fights, too. Like,
I can remember my dad telling me, he's like, let's go down. We're going to a hockey rink downtown. We're going to watch this guy. And it was, I swear he was playing for this team called Detroit CompuWare.
Yeah.
And for some reason, he was on a team that was playing in Toronto. And I was watching this guy, and it's back, like, kind of early 90s, late 80s, or whatever it was. It would have been late 80s. But people were grabbing onto this guy, and it was like he was throwing them in the corner and crushing people. And it was just like, who is this monster that's scoring 5 goals? It was just outrageous what he was doing.
Yeah. I didn't know that he was with Detroit, like CompuWare. Those Detroit teams, they always had, remember the Little Caesars? They had a
sponsored team. They recruit. That's
Honey
what
Baked.
It is.
Remember Honey Baked? There was a Honey Baked team. Honey Baked Ham sponsored a team. And I don't remember. There was like Detroit Honey Baked or something like that. And down in the States, yeah, they would recruit from all over the Midwest, like all over Michigan. And they'd be on these two or three teams that were stacked. I didn't know Lindros played on those, though. Yeah, he was a beast. He was something else. Yeah, those the Generals colors, it was outstanding.
Yeah, there were certain teams you were afraid of. Like I'm out west. There's a school that recruits called Notre Dame, like Wilcox, Saskatchewan. Like they'd bring in everyone from across the country, and you'd be afraid to play against them because they were so stacked.
Didn't Crosby go there for a year in high school?
I don't know. I remember like they were just an intimidating team to play against because they.
Right.
You know, they all, like, I don't know if it was money-driven or it was just because of the program, but there were some pretty good players that come out of there. I believe it was called the Notre Dame Hounds, I think.
Yeah, I've heard of them, but who would they play against? Like, were they playing,
like, you know,
high
so
schools?
I don't want to, like,
the crushing the high
so
school.
So, no, it was like,
I almost
I
went there,
were
too.
Bantam.
I got the invite, boys, Notre Dame Hounds.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have because your name throughout the country, like, at that age, for
Look
sure.
At you.
But, like, I don't know what the names are now, but it was Bantam Hockey, Bantam AAA. So
under
15, I guess.
Yeah, that would be right before you get to the CHL. Then that's
right,
why I thought Crosby might have gone there before he went
he
back
did.
To the Q.
Yeah, he did. Crosby went there.
Yeah, I remember seeing video of him and didn't
Morgan
Cujo
Riley
go there?
Too.
Did Riley go? Did Cujo go there? I felt like Cujo might have gone there.
I'm sure they pumped out some amazing players. Like they were a known program out west. Like you'd go there and they trained and like they were kind of like these one stop shop schools and programs before they all became really you know, they're everywhere now.
Right.
You know,
and there's a lot of financing behind it now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, where is that? In Saskatchewan somewhere?
Yeah, Wilcox, Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's,
that's you know, where I said no thanks.
Nowhere.
Yeah. that would be the issue, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, do they recruit from, like, guys? Like, did Wendell
anywhere
go
in the
there?
Country.
Like, shouldn't Wendell be going there? Or, like,
anywhere
Saskatchewan
in the country.
Boys, Chaser? Or,
like,
no, I know
yeah.
that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, if Crosby's going, like, that's, he's in Cole Harbor. He's the ocean's 10 minutes from his house.
Yeah.
It's not,
like it's
pretty far away from Wilcox, Saskatchewan, I can tell you that. Anson Carter will join us in about a half an hour. Get you more of an update on the Leafs and their roster for tomorrow night. Back into the Oilers, just having really not a lot of fun. The Oilers are not having fun right now. We'll see what Anson can tell us about that, among other things in the NHL. And Team Al Dog is going to be back on the clock. I got to catch a heater here. You guys went 4-2 last week. We got 4 games in the NFL. We'll catch up with Al's brother in about an hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
So I just got the scoop on Lindros. He was drafted to the Sioux, didn't report there, so he went to play at CompuWare, and it was some Christmas time tournament, and right after that he got traded to the Jens, and months later he won the Memorial Cup in Oshawa.
Oh, no way.
So that's why he was playing for the Detroit CompuWare, because he got drafted to the Sioux and didn't report.
Yeah, he liked
he
doing that.
I was just going to say,
give him that.
He made a habit out of that.
Yeah,
I don't blame him at all. You got one career. Awesome. You play where you want. Play where
what
you
was
want
the issue
play.
With the Sioux, though? Like, what? Obviously, we get to the bottom of it
it's
maybe
dump,
with him at some point. Well, yeah, but, I mean, Gretzky played up there. Did Paul Coffey play up there? I think Coffey was in Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a rich history. People are pointing out that Crosby went to Shattuck St. Mary's. Not
same thing. Wendell Clark went to Notre Dame.
I was just on their alumni page. Yeah, they had some heavy hitters for sure. That
Wendell was there. Fights when he was at that school, like fighting other players in the league.
I'm sure he tuned up a few people. Like, you know, he just I think Morgan Riley went there. Roddy Brind'Amour went there too. I think Jeff Cortnell or Russ Cortnell, one of the two.
Yeah, Cortnell, probably the both brothers. Gary Lehman, someone said. Yeah, wow. Gary Lehman was in there. How about that? That was a line, I guess. Yeah, Steve tweeting in that there was Wendell, Cortnell, and Lehman were a line at Notre Dame. That would be a tough line to match up against. With scouts in the building, that's tough.
It's still amazing that Gary Lehman is one of the 50 goal scorers for the Leafs, only of three in history.
Crazy that
still blows my mind. I don't on a storied franchise of 100 years, you have three guys, especially like they've won cups, they've done everything like 50 goals.
Well,
like,
the three of them were
was
all
it him,
like,
Ricky Vive and
Andrejczuk.
Yeah, Andrejczuk. Yeah,
and Rick Vive did it three times. So you know, I believe he did it in three consecutive years. I think it was back to back to back. But it was all over the course of like, you know, 13 years or something. Like Rick Vive would have done it in the early 80s. Lehman did it in, I don't know, 88 or 89 before the Gilmore trade.
What
and
was
then
Matt's
Andrejczuk
highest?
Was in 93, 94, I think. So,
like, what was Matt's highest? Like, don't you think he would have been kissing
Sundin,
up?
I don't know if Sundin ever had 40. Like, if he did, he just crept over 40.
41 twice. I'm looking at it right now. He had 41.
With the Leafs?
Yep, 96, 97. And in 01-02, and he had 94 points in 96-97, and he had 80 points, 41 and 39 in 01-02.
That's another thing. I'm pretty sure that there might only be two Leafs all-time that have hit 100 points.
What?
Yeah, like Gilmore's one of them and Sittler's the other. There may be, because I don't think Sundin ever got to 100.
He did. I'm looking
he did,
at
he's
it.
He's right now, on.
No, with Quebec, he got 114 points.
Yeah, before he got here with Quebec. Did Marner hit 100? I can't remember. I don't think he hit 100.
No, didn't he get like 93?
Yeah.
I thought Marner got 93.
McDonald might have 1 year. Like Lanny, I looked it up recently, but it's Gilmore and Sittler own like the – like Dougie's got 127, then the next year he had 111. Sittler hit 100 two or three times. But, yeah, it's amazing. They've been around for 100 years. They got – three guys who have scored 50, and I think only two that have hit 100 points.
Marner at 94, just looking at it. So, right. I mean, very close, but, like, it's unique just based on the amount of time and the amount of players that have rolled through and opportunity and stuff. It just still blows my mind, you know, like.
Yeah, you would probably expect – you'd expect more, let's be honest. Like, when you compare it to other franchises that have been around for a long time – yeah, it's only happened four times. I'm looking at it right now. Gilmore had 127. Sittler had 117 1 year. Then Gilmore had 111. And then Darryl hit 100 right on the nose. And that's it. Two guys in Leaf history have had a 100-point season. It's happened four times. Twice for Gilmore, twice for Sittler. Andrejczuk had 99, was right there. Yeah. Wolfie Paimon had 97 1 year.
Wow.
Wolfie with a big year. And the year
game.
Lehman had 50, had 95 points on the season. But isn't that crazy? Three guys ever have scored 50, and only two have hit 100 points. Team's been around for 100 years.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's not like other – it would, you know, if you did Montreal stats, like would there be 20 guys or 10 guys that got 100? Like, I guess you'd have to dig deeper.
10 guys have hit 100. I mean, they got the first guy to ever score 50. And
right.
I don't know how many more have hit 50, though. That'd be an interesting question. Like, how many Habs have scored 50 in a season?
Yeah. Like, it'd just be interesting to see. It might be something that, you know, a historian would dig into and go, here's the seven Canadian teams. Just, you know, we focus on them a lot. Like, what is the...
Well, Edmonton's going to run away with all the big stats in the country.
But that's one guy. There's one guy. There's
really.
Gretzky,
Messier,
then there's Messier.
Coffee.
Yeah, that's true.
Coffey's got three or four of the most insane defensive seasons
that's
in
true.
History.
Yeah.
You know, and
Yari
then,
Curry had 50, I think,
absolutely.
Playing with Gretzky.
Anderson hit 50. Bernie Nichols had 80-something. Didn't he when he was in Edmonton, or was he in L.A.?
Well, he had 92 in L.A., I thought, but I wonder what he had in Edmonton. But you're right, like, just there might be a big pocket there when they were, you know, I guess,
right.
dominating.
And now you got McDavid
80s.
And Draisaitl, who's going to do it.
Yeah,
a bunch
that's
of
true.
Times.
That's true. Yeah.
So Edmonton, I would think, would run away with it. I don't. Vancouver, Bure would have had 50 multiple times there.
Winnipeg, when Solani was there, didn't he get 78?
76 as a rookie.
76 as a rookie, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and Howard Chuck, I'm sure, would have had the stats
he would have
there.
Some big years of 100-plus.
Yeah.
For sure. But, yeah, I mean, the offense was there in the 80s, and the Leafs weren't that good in the 80s. That's the issue. Like, when other teams were putting up, you look like the Stastny brothers and stuff. Like,
yeah,
you know, guys in every spot had – serious point producers.
Dude, back in that day, third line centermen had like 35 goals and 80 points. Like,
right.
those were third line
well,
numbers.
Yeah. Craig McTavish was your, you know, prototypical third line center, maybe fourth line on a good team. He was a 20 goal guy. Like, that's, you know, no bucket flying around out there. Just
yeah.
like that. You're right. Like, guys farther down in the lineup were certainly, it was offensive back then, but. You know, it's not like the offense had dried up. Like, I still think the league produces, I haven't seen the averages, but probably just under 6 goals a game, are they not? 5.5, 5.6 or something, I thought I read. But,
yeah,
you know, it's not like it – I felt like it always used to be 8 back in the day, like 5.3, you know, 4.
It was
four.
Definitely more in the 80s in particular, for sure.
Right.
But, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking up the Habs leaders. Steve Schott had 60. Guy Lafleur had a bunch of seasons over 50, a bunch of them. You know, snuck in there twice?
Who?
Stefan Richie.
Wow, he could bring – I played with him in St. Louis. Man, you want to see a stick. He had, like, this ridiculous curve on his stick. He was intimidating because he could shoot the puck.
He hit 50 and 51 over the course of a couple of seasons in Montreal. Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah,
and Richard hit 50 right on the nose and then never had anything more than that, which, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. We'll see what happens with the Leafs. We'll see if Matthews and Marner in particular, maybe Nylander. I don't think Tavares is going to be hitting 50 in his time here. I don't think he hits 100 points. And I don't think Nylander's in a position to score 50 or 100 points. It's Matthews and Marner. Like, who's going to join the 100-point plateau with the Leafs? Who's going to try to hit 50-plus goals? And Matthew's probably the only guy realistically that's going to score 50-plus.
Marner's a point producer. You know,
yeah.
Matthews is the goal scorer and the point producer.
I think Matthews could hit 100 points in a year. Like, everything's cooking for him. He stays healthy. Like, if he scores 60 one year, 40 assists seems doable, you know, considering the talent he plays with. But, yeah, those are the record books are there for a reason. And then on top of it, you've got, you know, wins and losses, playoff success. There's a lot to be potentially rewritten here in Toronto.
Exactly.
And they're back in action tomorrow night down in New York playing the Islanders. So we'll look ahead to that with Anson Carter in about 20 minutes. Al's brother at 6:25. Team Al Dog will be on the clock. We've got 4 games to pick this weekend, so we'll get to those games as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
So you learn every day, and I had no idea. Growing up, you always knew the nicknames for the Leafs lines, because it was always nicknamed the Hound Line. I didn't know that the reason they were called the Hound Line is because they were all Notre Dame Hounds.
I didn't remember that either. I mean, that's in the 80s. That I was a kid. How am I supposed to remember
that? I thought
they
were the Hound Line because they, like, hounded pucks or whatever. Like, I had no idea it was because they were all Notre Dame Hounds.
Right.
Now I do.
Wendell.
That's impressive.
Cortnell, Lehman. Shout out to the Hounds, Notre Dame. Big fans. You got supporters here on Overdrive. And, you know, I was watching earlier today, I was just flipping around, and Leafs TV, what's it called now? Leafs Nation Network, I think?
Yes.
They were playing Game 6 of the 94 series against San Jose. And Mike Gardner wins it in overtime. Sometimes those games come on, I'm like, this is so good. It's Bob Cole, Harry Neal. Like, right in their primes, right in their element. Dougie Gilmore is out there playing 45 minutes a night. And
it's the best.
It's the best. Like, because you know they're going to win. You know, that's a big part of it. You kind of forget the details of the game. You're like, how did this one end again? But it's in six, and they're down 3-2. I know they win the series, so something happens here.
Dude, it was the best 2 years. It was like I was like a teenager in junior hockey, but it was like those two playoff runs in a row. You were like those were the best 2 years. Like it's like 92, 93. Mm-hmm. Imagine if they ever won back-to-back cups and did what Tampa did, like how much that would just be stuck in your memory. Like 92, 93 is ingrained in my memory, and they didn't even get to the final.
I know. That's what's crazy about it is they didn't even make the final.
No.
Well, and not to mention the way it – wasn't that the Gretzky thing and the high stick and all that?
That was the first year, yeah. People forget that Vancouver smoked them the second year. Yeah. They lost in five, I think, against Vancouver. Then Vancouver went on to lose to the Rangers in seven, I believe, in that cup final, right?
Well, yeah. That one went a little deeper than I think the Rangers wanted to. Like Vancouver was a really good team.
Really good team, yeah. Kind of a team of destiny there, too. You know, what's so weird about that, like you tell, if you were to tell younger people today in Toronto, the Leafs were in the West. They were playing San Jose and L.A. and Vancouver. And, you know, they played St. Louis and
that's crazy.
Detroit. And, yeah, they were in the West. I don't, you know, I guess geographically. But think about that travel. Yeah, exactly. You're going to L.A., you're going to San Jose, you're going to Vancouver. Although it goes both ways. Like those teams have to fly back to Toronto.
Know, but
that's not a short flight, man.
I was in the league at that time. Like the Rangers won the cup. Ray and I played for the Islanders.
Right.
I didn't know that was the. I guess
the Leafs were in the West. Yeah, the Leafs were in the West.
Now we got a game in the West. It's an hour flight north. You know,
like I know exactly. You're playing them and going against the Western Conference. They're almost directly north.
Yeah.
You see this Penny Hardaway postgame presser that going viral. Penny is he went to Memphis as a college player. And I would assume is considered their greatest player ever, him or Derrick Rose. And he hasn't been having a very good time down there. And I think they're like a 500 team. They're in a weak division overall. Like Memphis has a history of kind of running that division or that conference in college basketball. And his team's like 500. But he's had some great recruiting classes, like five-star, top-of-the-line recruiting classes. So the expectation is that his team would take a big step. And I guess they lost, and he's getting grilled in that market. And this is how Penny Hardaway decided to respond to the criticism last night.
I think the one thing I can say to this media, because this media gets kind of up sometimes when it comes to me, we don't have our full roster. Y'all know we don't have our full roster. Stop asking me stupid questions about if I feel like I can do something. If I had my roster like they did, then I feel like I can do whatever I want to do. I'm coaching really hard. My boys are playing really hard. I'm not embarrassed about nothing. We have four freshmen starting. Y'all need to act like it. Act like we got 17, 18, and 19-year-olds out here trying to learn how to play against 22, 23, and 24-year-old guys. Come on, man. Stop disrespecting me, bro. Like, don't do that. I work too hard. I work way too hard for that. Y'all write all these articles about me, and all I do is work. We got young kids on the floor. They got young kids on the floor.
I understand that, and he has the street cred to tell people to F off and blah, blah, blah. But it's like it goes both ways. I mean, when you're overachieving and it's just the tire pumping, how come you just don't go out there and say, stop the tire pumping? We're like, just stop it. It's always when it's going garbage that you have a comment like that.
I think it's so soft. I think that's a sign of the time, like this new – and listen, I'm a part of this generation that – I just can't picture an old school coach ever doing that, saying, woe is me, how dare you criticize me, why are you being so tough?
I'm working
hard.
Yeah,
of course you're working hard. Just so is everybody else.
I know.
Like, I'm used to hearing coaches go on rants when the media takes a shot at one of their players. That we see all the time. How dare you go after a kid? He's 18. He's trying. You want to take a shot at someone? Take a shot at me. Penny's basically said, take a shot at the guys. They suck. I got to coach them. Don't take a shot at me.
You know what I'm working with. Like, he's basically saying, like, my team is garbage because I've got injury. You know what I'm working with here.
Don't chew them
up. I'm doing my best.
Yeah, chew the 18-year-old up. He sucks. I'm working hard. I'm Penny.
Yeah. Like, it's just, and it's such a God forbid you ever disrespect me because I'm Penny Hardaway and I always work hard.
Right.
It's kind of...
It's lame, man. That is not a good look at all. And that is the attitude. I'm Penny. I'm one of the great Tigers of all time. I came home. Yeah, it's not working out, but you need to lay off because I'm Penny Hardaway and I'm working hard. How is the media supposed to corroborate that you're working hard? You know, like how are you supposed to confirm that? And who defines
it? And there's sometimes
it.
In sports where nobody you don't show your driver's license when you walk into the building. It's like it's a sports performance. And if you get dummied and people are garbage out there, they're going to be critiqued about it. Nobody cares that they're freshmen. Are they supposed to just write nothing?
Right, exactly. Like, sorry, blank page. Incomplete.
Yeah. Oh, they're too young. Sorry, I can't critique that one. Sorry.
I don't know.
You're right. I think it's something where I
can't stand it when agents, they text me. How could you say that? Well, how come you didn't text me when I just pumped the tires of your client?
When
I do all the video breakdowns of how great he is. And if you say he had a poor performance or he can't play like that if the team's going to win, these losers are on the phone. It's like, give me a break.
Well, with that in mind, we'll reset. We'll look ahead to the Leaf game tomorrow night, the Raptor game in Washington tonight. We got picks. Al's brother will be a part of the next hour. And Anson Carter coming up as well on what happened with the Oilers, team he's familiar with, the market he's familiar with. Hour 3 up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.